Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by Acuity Scheduling. Acuity Scheduling makes scheduling easy. Clients can view your real-time availability and self-book appointments, fill out forms, and even pay online, eliminating 100% of the drudgery. To learn more and get a 45-day free trial, visit acuityscheduling.com/hack. That's A-C-U-I-T-Y scheduling.com/hack. Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Over the years, my guest has moved from franchise owner to chief marketing officer to entrepreneur. After spending nearly a decade in the cleaning business, my guest made the move into digital marketing with his venture Self-Employed King, a digital marketing agency for small businesses. Today, he has successfully exited two businesses and is now building a great new company as founder and CEO of Social Quant, a Twitter marketing service. Now, let's hack Mike Koala. Before we get rolling today, I want to just take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Acuity Scheduling. When you book appointments or meetings, you know how challenging the back and forth can be to find that right day and time? It aggravates me so much. I get a lot of requests for phone calls, appointments, interviews, all of those kinds of things, to the point where I won't ignore you unless you don't use scheduling software. There is nothing worse than, hey, does 10 p.m. Tuesday work? How about at 11 a.m. on this time? Then, oh, what time zone? You know this. You've felt this pain. Well, never ask what time works for you again. Please, for your sake and your customers and your clients' sake. Acuity Scheduling makes scheduling easy. Plus, it works with existing Google Office 365 iCloud or Outlook calendars. Clients can view your availabilities and self-book appointments, complete onboarding forms, and even submit payments so they can get right down to business. Helps you avoid no-shows with automatic text and email reminders, and it's simple to use. Here's what I want you to do. Visit acuityscheduling.com/hack and start booking like a boss and charging like a champ. Paid plans start at just $10 a month, but for listeners of Hack the Entrepreneur, you can access a free 45-day trial of Acuity Scheduling stress-free schedule management. That's a month and a half completely free by going to acuityscheduling.com/hack. That's A-C-U-I-T-Y scheduling.com/hack. And we thank them for our support. We're back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely my pleasure, Mike. Thanks for joining me, and I think we're going to have some fun. So what do you say? Let's jump into it?
I'm ready to jump in.
Nice. All right, Mike, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I live by the quote, imperfect action beats perfect inaction. So, and it's hard, I think, you know, particularly when you're starting off as an entrepreneur, just learning to, you know, kind of bring something to the market and get that feedback. So it's, you know, a lot of folks will tell you you've got a good idea, but when you ask them, you know, to stick their hand into their wallet and take out the credit card or some cash or something to validate that idea, it's much different, right? So I think it's always, you know, really, really important for us as entrepreneurs to get to market fast. And, you know, for me, I learned that early on. And it's just something that, you know, throughout my entrepreneurial career, I've had some great successes, many lessons, more than successes. But, you know, along the way, each time it's been just, you know, bringing something to market really fast, just doing it, knowing that it's not perfect. It might be a little choppy. It's okay. Get feedback from the market, iterate. If you're honest with the market, they'll be okay with it. And then just move forward. And I would say looking back and even to this point right now, I'm bringing something to market in the next 30 days. It's not going to be pretty, but it's, you know, the market will tell me what they want from it.
I love it because asking people, people love to say, like, just ask your audience, what would they love to buy? What would, and people will say they'll buy anything. But when it actually is there and there's a sales page and there's a buy button and a place to put in your credit card, it's a completely different game.
100% agree. You know, it's funny you say that. And right before the show, obviously, we were talking about, I was just at a conference. And at the conference, it was very different than any other conference I had been to. The keynote speaker at the end, instead of giving a 2-hour speech before we all left, said, who here wants to grow their business? And he said, if you're serious about growing your business, I'm going to close the doors, but you have to agree right now, it's going to get freaky in here. But if you're okay with that and you don't leave, just know that you're going to have to do everything that I said. And instead of just like teaching us and committing to something, literally it was one thing was, you know, call up a vendor and try to get a lower price. And not just say you're going to do it, but do it. And, you know, it was interesting watching, you know, 200 other folks in the room, entrepreneurs who have pretty good businesses, you know, get a little bit uncomfortable in doing it. And it was pretty cool.
Who was the speaker?
This was Noah Kagan from Sumo Me. Yeah. So, you know, the three things that he said to grow a business, which we all know is, you know, one is obviously, you know, try to, you know, increase prices, two, get better prices, or three, come up with a new product, right? So, you know, we had to work on all three different areas and, calling up a vendor and trying to get a lower price. I went right for Stripe personally, you know, because they're a big part of our business. But, you know, it was cool. It was, you know, it was just interesting to watch him do that. And, you know, it was a lot of fun at the end of the day.
Did Stripe deal well with lowering prices?
Haven't yet, but I know I will.
Nice.
Because, you know, I think it's also a matter of volume. And if you're doing enough, and the customer support is very good. It's funny, I actually was on their site and they traditionally don't have like a contact. It's all email. Mm-hmm. But they had for a very small moment in time, like a live person on where you could actually talk with somebody. And I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. I was like, where are you based out of? And they're like, San Francisco. I'm like, saying in the back of my mind, I'm like, how are you running like this big of a company with customer support with what it costs to live in San Francisco, right? I mean, just, you know, you could imagine they were telling me they were testing it out to see what it would be like. And obviously, when I went to Stripe the other day, that button wasn't there. So I guess they're going a different route.
I guess we just figured out what works and what doesn't.
Exactly.
I love it. So you are a partner, like you're a co-founder of Social Quant now. And before that, you've had several businesses, I believe a couple that you've exited. So this isn't your first game. This isn't your first time into entrepreneurship. So let's go back, Mike, if we can, because I know going through it in life, we don't always notice when this happens, but usually looking back, there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they've realized that either they have to make this huge difference in the world, or as mostly seems to be the case, they find that they just cannot work for somebody else anymore. So could you tell me, Mike, what side of the fence you see yourself on? And then take us back to when you discovered this about yourself.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think yeah, as an entrepreneur, if we're true entrepreneurs, we've always kind of had that in our belly, right? So me, I was that kid that had not just one lemonade stand, but multiple lemonade stands. I sold everything as a kid. I mean, you name it. I tried to do it. 17, I had a boat cleaning business where I had like people going on and off boats to clean them. But I also grew up in a very wealthy town. The good thing is my parents taught me well, like, you know, they always said it's their money. It's not my money. So if I wanted it, I had to work for it. So while all my friends were driving Porsches, BMWs, nice cars, you know, I bought my, you know, Chrysler Baron. And, you know, I knew what it was like to work for a dollar. And, you know, but with that said, I did go, you know, down the path of going to college and then getting, you know, the traditional JOB. And I worked on Wall Street, did really well. But I remember always having the desire of starting my own business. But what really got me to do it was 9/10/2001. I came home from working on Wall Street. My wife wanted to go out that evening. We went out, had a couple of drinks, or at least I did. And I learned that night that we were having our first child. And, you know, it was just kind of at that moment we were discussing the fact that I traveled a lot, was working, you know, exceptionally long hours, but working long hours for somebody else, and just decided, you know, that we were going to do what I wanted to do, which was start my own business. So, you know, that morning I went in, spoke to my manager. I had a great relationship with him. This was early in the morning, right before 8 o'clock. And we all know what happened later on that day. Unfortunately, the world changed, but it was, you know, kind of at that moment. And, you know, now I look back, you know, my son's actually 14 years old and, You know, this was 15 years ago, you know, this year that, you know, I made the change. And, you know, I think I shared with you before, I've had, you know, a lot of great businesses, but I've also had a ton of businesses that just, you know, taught me a lot along the way.
I love how it's, they didn't fail. They just taught you a lot.
You don't fail. I really, you know, that word is used, I think, by too many entrepreneurs. And it's like kind of like a thing to write about nowadays. You know, tell us your biggest failure or what have you. And, you know, I'm a real big believer that, you know, we need to speak to ourselves in a very healthy way. So, you know, I'm constantly trying to program not only my own mind, but the way, you know, my children, I speak to my children and the way they speak to themselves. But, you know, I think it's real important. You know, failure is, you know, really an end. You know, and unless you stay down, unless you stop, yes, you've failed. But, you know, otherwise, you know, they've just taught me great lessons. The market's told me that, you know, what I thought was great isn't great. And that's okay. I either pivot or, you know, completely go into something different. And, you know, I've done that a lot along the way. I mean, I've gone from owning a residential cleaning company, right? Like a local cleaning company. I grew it to 50 plus people to owning an online company, selling office supplies, then selling cleaning supplies to now running a software company. So, you know, three completely different businesses and many others along the way. But it's just, it's, you know, it's the entrepreneur inside of me and I've learned a lot along the way. So I love it.
I love it. Will you, or could you imagine yourself going back to running like a local cleaning sort of business again?
No, definitely not.
We don't go back from software, do we?
Definitely not. You know, we know our strengths, right? As entrepreneurs, we know our weaknesses. My biggest weakness is, you know, my heart. And, you know, I care a tremendous amount about my employees and just that, you know, the type of individual that we had working for us. You know, I had 18 to 22 year old girls that were, you know, our primary workforce. And I learned to hear every excuse in a book on why they had to leave work or be late for work or what have you. And, you know, seeing all these single moms and, you know, it's just, you know, my wife became like a daycare center, just, you know, offering to watch their kids for free because they need to put food on the table. And I felt so bad. And it's just, you know, it was a great business. It's a very profitable business, which is great. It's an annuity, which is something that I always look for in all businesses, much like software, right? It's annuitized. When I had my online company selling office supplies, you know, the idea was to, you know, kind of, you know, we did direct mail. I mean, believe it or not, direct mail to get customers to buy from us online. It was very profitable because, you know, if I sent a dentist, you know, for instance, you know, a picture of the rubber gloves that I knew he was using every day and at half the price from what he normally bought it at, obviously he's going to come to our site, he's going to buy it. But then, you know, we had CSR reps that would get on the phone and start building relationships with them and then cross sell them into everything else. And, you know, it was an annuity. So I've always liked that about businesses. So I just don't think I'd ever go back to a service-based business.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. So an annuity, you mean like recurring revenue?
Correct. 100%.
Okay. So that's why software to you is not a one-time payment. It's either a monthly, quarterly, yearly, something like that, because it's often easier to keep a customer than it is to get new ones.
Definitely, 100%. And then if you have a really good product and you're constantly innovating and listening to your customers and creating, you know, a better product or, you know, spinoffs of it, you know, you can continue, you have a market now to go and sell to.
Exactly. There's a famous quote somewhere I recently heard, which is, I don't want to be in the order business. I want to be in the reorder business.
Love that.
That to me is so it. That's software right there. So with recurring revenue, with it not in the service business, with it online the way it is, I think probably for scalable, for distributed teams, all those things. Let's talk projects. So projects is a loose term, Mike, but whether it's something new you want to do within Social Quant or whether it's a new idea altogether that you want to do, what is this process? Now that you have, it's not just you, it's an actual team. You have to worry not about your time and resources, but also theirs. When an idea comes to you or is brought to you or comes through your inbox, do you have a written process or is it a gut process? But what process do you go through right now to decide whether something is worth yours and your team's time, energy, and resources?
Yeah, so it's a gut, first of all. But second of all, it's, you know, I go right to my list. And so whether that's existing customers, but then definitely my entire list. And, you know, I ask for feedback on it. So I'm constantly doing that. You know, I'll ask, you know, what are two areas that you think Social Quant could improve on? You know, what are, not just saying, you know, are you happy or are you not? Because that's, you know, it's a closed-ended question and you're not going to get much data. And it's a, you know, trust me, it's a lot of work too, because, you know, sometimes the responses we get from it, last one we did, we had just under 500 responses come in. But, you know, we had somebody go through, put it all into an Excel spreadsheet, and then try to group everything that was similar together. And by getting all of that information, you know, it really helped us out. I mean, even something like, if you were to explain social quant to one of your friends in one sentence, share that sentence with me. And I had something like 300 plus responses to that. I mean, that was a lot, you know, and at the time my team wasn't that big. So, you know, I had to go through it, you know, pretty much myself with one other person. And, you know, but what happened is, you know, I kept on seeing a lot of common responses that now I could take those responses and those keywords that were being used and use that in my branding and my messaging. And that helps me convert much better.
Wow. I like it. So 300 responses to how would you explain social quant to your friend in one sentence? How varied was the response that you knew was right? How varied was that from what?
Very different. Very different.
From how you were sort of already projecting it?
Yeah. So like, you know, like, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, what do? I mean, I'm not going to be promotional here, but we get people more Twitter followers, right? 30,000 foot overview. That's what we do. But then I started hearing a lot of people talk about like branding, you know, like that we were increasing, like a lot of people kept saying, you know, increasing my brand, increasing my personal influence, like influence was a keyword that I kept hearing over and over again. And that's something that we weren't using before in our messaging to people. So, you know, then that's like, okay, well, what am I going to do with that information? So now for, you know, our onboarding, obviously we do a lot of, you know, content, you know, and then they subscribe to, you know, some type of ebook that we have. But then that drip series that goes afterwards, you know, I'm touching on all these key points that folks have now shared with me that, you know, do you want to build your personal influence? You know, beforehand, that wasn't something that I looked at, you know, as something that social quant should really be categorized as from a branding standpoint. But it helped us, and, you know, it's now helped with our messaging. We're coming out with a reporting tool, you know, right now. So, you know, I said, strictly looking at your Twitter analytics, what are the areas when you download, you know, the Excel spreadsheet? And I told people exactly how to do it. I said, here's what you need to do, because Twitter analytics is, you know, very difficult to digest. You actually have to go and download everything into an Excel spreadsheet if you really want to see like what your click-through rates are and see any trends. So I said, here's what you need to do. Go do this. And this, I didn't get as high of a response. You know, I would say it's just really the brand, you know, advocates, the ones that really love us that took the time to do this, because it was a process, right? It was a lot of things that they had to do. But when they did it, the feedback that I got has now helped me say, here are the 7 things that we're going to launch next month, you know, in October, in this new product that we're rolling out, because this is what the market's told me is difficult. I'm sure in 3 months, it won't look anything like it will next month, but at least it'll be out to the market and then we can start getting feedback.
That's because you believe in imperfect action over perfect inaction.
Exactly.
Nice. So how is it dealing with a co-founder that maybe doesn't inherently think in that way?
We're a perfect partnership. You know, when I mentioned before that I had the online business,
yep,
you know, that didn't work out as well. Me and the partner were completely different. He was much more of the tech guy. I'm, you know, my background is very much into marketing, but still, you know, he tried to always get involved in the marketing end. And when I wanted something done on the tech side, it just couldn't get done. And if it was, it took way too long, right? So, you know, we were just always butting heads, and that caused a lot of friction and a lot of conflict with our business. Whereas now it's, you know, I would say it's like, honestly, it's the perfect utopia, because it's just, if he doesn't have the time to do it, we'll reach out to one of our team members, you know, who we outsource a lot to, and, you know, get it done by them. And, you know, there's really, you know, he'll say, hey, you know, we're testing out a lot right now with artificial intelligence and bots for customer service reps, for bigger brands that just can't manage their inbox in Twitter, right? So how can we use artificial intelligence to help from that side? You know, and we're testing a lot. Now, you know, that wasn't high on my priority list, but it's high on his. So it was like, all right, well, you know, I'm the guy that's going to market everything. So I didn't have time right now. Let me find some folks who can, you know, help me with that right now and move that up. So, you know, that from a partnership side, we don't have that much friction, but I will say, you know, to folks out there that are maybe looking into entrepreneurship and, you know, having, for me, like I don't have the tech side, right? So I could either outsource or, you know, which is going to cost me money, or B, bring on a partner who can do that, right? And then it's not going to cost me, but then you have to deal with that partner. So, you know, sometimes you're going to have a great
experience. It
doesn't cost you money, you might think, but it's going to cost you a lot of time and possibly a lot of headaches. And, you know, my previous business, it was a lot of headaches. We had lawsuits because of, you know, him just not running the business the same way that I would run a business. So it was a lot of friction, whereas today it's awesome. It's a great relationship.
Nice. It's really, I think picking the right co-founder isn't just because you're non-technical and this partner's technical. It goes beyond that, where you really need to, you have to have a similar overall vision and drive, but then you also have to have very, I think, different sort of strengths and weaknesses.
I agree 100%. You know, it's funny because the business, my previous business, was started over a weekend. I mean, we were at a conference and it was 2008. We both owned cleaning companies and it was a big conference for the franchise that we owned. And everybody there was complaining about the price of supplies and how the economy was going down, but prices were still going up. So bing, my entrepreneurial hat, you know, my light goes on. And I was like, well, if I could get you that same product at 20% less, you know, would you buy it from me? Like, yeah. So, you know, I knew the guy next to me. I had always seen, you know, the websites that he built and knew that he had a background in tech. And, you know, so we both just started chatting. And that following Monday, I picked up the phone and called two of the big suppliers that we all bought from and said, listen, if I was to buy a pallet, what's the best price that you could give to me? You know, and then got that price. And I said, oh, by the way, you're going to ship those for me also, right? And, you know, negotiated the shipping for the drop shipping side of it. And our business started and it just, you know, grew from there. So it's kind of like we fell into being partners and then grew this business to, you know, selling over $20 million in office supplies, right? I mean, who would have thought? So it wasn't intentional, but, you know, looking back, had it been intentional, I don't think, you know, I mean, my vision was to grow it to, you know, 100 million and much more. And, you know, we were making very good incomes and he was kind of just happy where we were in our life. So, you know, yeah, I think I agree with you. It's real important other than just what your strengths and weaknesses are, but making sure you both had the same direction.
Yeah. Yeah. So with your team now, it's distributed, I believe, right?
Correct. So I work personally out of the venture capital firm that backed us. And, you know, I work with them on many different assignments. He works with them on many different assignments also. But, you know, other than that, everybody else is, you know, either out of their house or a different location.
Right. And fully distributed around the world or?
Yes. You know, South Africa is probably one of the largest areas right now, just because, you know, we get great work. It's only a 6-hour difference, you know, time zone standpoint compared to like when, you know, I think I had shared with you, I work with folks in Australia and, you know, because of the time zone difference, you know, that's really, you know, it creates strain compared to, you know, me just now saying, you know, at 4 o'clock, you know, I still have an idea and I want to talk to them and it's only 10 o'clock in South Africa.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause I mean, Australia is like 12 hours difference, basically. It's as far away as we can get.
Exactly. Yeah. So we always do calls either 8 o'clock at night or 8 o'clock in the morning. And that's, you know, that's about it.
And are there, I know for a fact that there's positives and negatives to distributed teams. But do you think you would ever push it to be non-distributed and work out of an office altogether?
Yeah, there's definitely strengths in that and, you know, synergy, right? You know, 1 + 1 = 3 when everybody's around one another. But, you know, I think also if you're a good leader, you know, and you give people the creative control and the motivation, you know, to work with you and, you know, everybody hitting benchmarks. You know, we work a lot out of Trello. So, you know, I can see people in it. I used to, in the past, use a thing called Time Doctor to kind of track what folks were doing and what sites they were on. And I did that a lot with my CSR reps. I don't do that as much anymore because really at the end of the day, you know, we want to maintain, you know, as close to 100% satisfaction. So I use a lot of, you know, customer sentiment tools. We've built some internal ones to see, you know, what our brand is and how it's being mentioned online. And, you know, we're consistently always hearing great feedback. And provided that, you know, we continue to always do that to team news, that I'm not going to, you know, kind of bog people down and kind of watch every move they make. Hey, let's all work together and let's see what we could do. And, you know, each month we're consistently growing at a very healthy rate. And as long as we continue to do that, you know, I don't need to micromanage, which I love.
Brilliant. 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 I love it. All right, Mike, this has been an absolute blast. I want to wrap up with one final question for you, if we could.
Fire away.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So What it is this gap that we live in as entrepreneurs and dreamers. We're always projecting our personal successes into the future. So in 1 month when you hit that metric, in 6 months when you hit that revenue target, in 1 year when you stand on that stage, whatever it happens to be, you and I both know that seconds before you hit that goal, you're going to set 5 or 10 loftier ones into the future, which from the outside, no matter how successful we are and appear to ourselves, we're always walking towards the horizon. And we both know that as you walk towards a horizon, it always gets further away, which puts us in this gap. So I would love it, Mike, right now. You've done a lot of things already, and I know you're going to go on and do even bigger things. But if you could stop and turn around and look behind you right now, look at the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses, and tell me how you feel about the journey up until today.
I would say, you know, 3 years ago, if you asked me that question, when I had sold both my businesses, and, you know, you would think to most folks was in that perfect utopia, right? I was living on the beach. That's where I wanted to. Life was, you know, to most folks would say was good. Started doing a lot of consulting. Things were good, according to all my friends. I had a lot of money in the bank. But I personally was not happy at all. It's just, you know, I was 40 years old. You know, I felt unfulfilled. It was the first time in my life that I had nothing to do, but wanted to do something and felt forced like I had to do something. You know, because I just inside I wanted to. You know, fast forward 3 years later, you know, I'm happy with where I am right now. You know, there's still a lot I want to do. I want to get really a lot more involved in helping, you know, with children who want to become entrepreneurs instead of going the traditional route of the, you know, of high school, you know, college job. I think, you know, there's a lot of good, brilliant minds in our school systems, and they're just, you know, missing, you know, a little piece that I would like to help with, like if I had to give back. And so, you know, that's, I would say, probably the only thing I'm not doing as much as I'd like to right now. But I feel like, you know, social quant is kind of very close to where I'll be able to start doing a lot more of that and giving back. But I'm happy with where I am right now.
That's always so nice to hear. I'm glad I didn't ask you like 3 years ago then or 2 years ago. Because this is a good place. I'm glad you're searching and found that happiness within it.
You know, it was funny. I feel bad because I've always had coaches in my life. And, you know, 3 years ago, I don't know if you know, her name's Jamie Masters now, but her, at the time, yes. I believe it was Jamie Tardy, the eventual millionaire. And I love her. I just saw her when I was out in Austin. I felt so bad because I was probably like a complete mess as a person to coach because I just, you know, it was one of those times, you know, call it a midlife crisis, right? I could buy what I wanted, but it wasn't the buying or the having, you know, monetarily. It was just being in that space where, you know, I could be happy and feel like I was giving back and adding value. And, you know, it took a while to find, but yeah, it was funny. You know, I'm sure it was one of those clients that she was probably like, you know, oof, couldn't wait to get rid of her. She said she loved me, but, you know, I know deep inside I was a pain in the butt.
Fair enough. It's, you got to make her work for it, you know, sometimes.
Exactly.
All right, Mike, we've got to talk about your business, Social Quant, in passing, but could you now give the listener specifics about it and then tell them where they can track that and also you down online?
Awesome. Yeah. So anybody can visit me just on Twitter at Mike Kawula, K-A-W-U-L-A. I'm extremely active on Twitter. It's kind of like my social media platform to go to and have great conversations. You can also email me at mike@socialquant.net. Our website is socialquant.net. And, you know, 30,000 foot overview. And you know, what we do is we build people's Twitter followers for them through social listening. So you give us a list of keywords of the types of folks that you think that you would want to, you know, have connect with you and follow you on Twitter. And what happens is over 30, 60, 90 days is not just that your Twitter following increases, but more importantly, that your engagement, meaning, you know, people who are replying, retweeting you, or more importantly, clicking on a link and coming back to your website. That's what our customers see. So for those who are interested, we have a challenge. It's a 14-day challenge where I'm personally very involved in. There's a Facebook group. We've got just started it 3 weeks ago. We have 500 plus people in it already. Loving it, great success stories. But, you know, what I do is I teach people in there basically how to take a Twitter follower and turn it into business dollars. So, you know, that's the goal of it. It's free. And if you just visit socialquant.net, you'll see the challenge up in the right hand side of the website. Join it, and we'd love to see you inside of it.
I love it. Is Social Quant for like personal brands and people, or is it also for company Twitter?
Yeah, it's primarily, you know, if we were to look at our avatar, it's mostly, you know, a small individual entrepreneurs,
nice.
You know, who are, you know, looking to make a difference. You know, yes, some large corporations use us. We work with a lot of ad agencies throughout the world. But, you know, if I was to say, you know, who are the, you know, the majority of the thousands of customers that we work with, it's going to be, you know, everyday small mom and pop entrepreneurs who, you know, sell on a global basis. So a lot of authors, coaches, online entrepreneurs. So that's where our sweet spot is.
Very cool. Very cool. Socialquant.net and at Mike Koala, he's on LinkedIn and he's also on Twitter. I will link to both of those in the show notes on hacktheentrepreneur.com for you for when you get back to your computer. So Mike, once again, thanks so much for stopping by. Thanks for taking the time. And just thanks for being so open in your answers. I really, truly appreciate it. Please just keep doing what you're doing, man. It's awesome, inspiring to watch.
This was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Mike, thank you. That was a lot of fun. And I thank you for sharing so openly with us. I hope that you enjoyed it out there as much as I did, partaking in that conversation. But now we've reached the point of the show where we need to go back. So I went back through and I listened to the conversation with Mike one more time. Then I went once again, and then I went one more time. That last time through, there were some things that Mike said, but then there was this one thing that stood out so very, very clearly when I heard it. It was it. It was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I mean, we were at a conference, and it was 2008. We both owned cleaning companies, and it was a big conference for the franchise that we owned. And everybody there was complaining about the price of supplies and how the economy was going down, but prices were still going up. So bing, my entrepreneurial hat, you know, my light goes on. And I was like, well, if I could get you that same product at 20% less, you know, would you buy it from me?
And that's the hack. Mike. I love this. This is it. The amount of times that I get emailed or tweeted or something, somebody asking me the question of how do I decide on my next business? What's another idea? I want to create something. What is it? Where do I find business ideas? You listen. It's this acute sense of learning to listen to people and their problems. Trust me, our society is filled with people who complain about things. You have to listen to these complaints, not because they necessarily hold value and complaining is a worthwhile thing, but as an entrepreneur, these complaints are things that we want to fix, right? Painkiller, not a vitamin. We want to fix their pain. What are they complaining about? Price is a real issue. If the economy is making it so that your cost or what you can charge isn't going up, but your supplies are going up, that's a pain point that needs to be solved. So what does Mike say? Mike, rather than just like, oh man, everybody's complaining about this, he says he is entrepreneurial hat, and he says, if I could get you the exact same product for 20% cheaper, would you buy it from me? Then come Monday after the conference, he calls some suppliers, gets those prices locked down, and he calls more people and asks them if they will buy from him. These are problems that other people have. You can have these yourself. It could be something that you complain about, something that bothers you as you go through life day to day. And just become aware and listen for those problems. These problems are what need to be solved in order for your business to succeed. That's what it is. That's what it takes every single time. It's just learning to listen for these things and not just brush them aside or get annoyed by them, or even join in the complaining. It's listening. If you hear that complaint enough, or if you have that complaint enough times, just work on solving it. It's the ability to solve problems that will create your business, whether it's a service or a product. It's the ability to solve that problem for yourself and for others that will allow you and enable you to build a profitable business. Plain and simple. It's that easy. Mike, thank you very, very much. All right, so it's been fun. We're doing well. This is good. I'm enjoying myself. Are you? I think you are. You know what I would love? If you are enjoying yourself, hacktheentrepreneur.com/review. If you are on an iPhone or a computer and you have iTunes, hacktheentrepreneur.com/review. If you're on an iPhone, it's really cool. It takes you like magically. It's this cool link that takes you directly to a place where you can leave a rating and a review for the show on iTunes. There's 325 reviews, I think, in the US right now. It's pretty cool. So any country that you happen to be in Canada, it's different than in the States, but you'll see when you get there. But I would love a rating and a review. Stop by there. Tell me if you like the show. Tell me what you'd like to change. It would be awesome. It would help a lot. It would, give the show that little kick that it needs. So just go straight to iTunes, or if you're on a Google Android phone in Google Play, you could also leave it a rating and a review there, and it would help very, 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 very much. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's very cool of you to take those minute and a half to 2 minutes to do that for me. All right. It's been fun. Thank you for stopping by. Thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Thanks for the review in advance. I'll thank you. But yeah, until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.